Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, your drive time show, your favorite duo on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Here to keep you company until the hour of six. And yeah, we're not going until the hour of seven. So Wednesdays, China Corner is back. So Wednesdays Home Run runs from 4 to 6. And China Corner takes over from 6 all the way to 7. So fasten a seatbelt for the next 2 hours because we have a 3 hour worth of content, basically. Because today's discussion is social, which is just big enough on its own. But when you're approaching it from an African perspective, it becomes even bigger and a little too, tricky to shoehorn in a time period of 2 hours. But that's what we're going to do. So, when it comes to, first of all, I have to point out the obvious here. We didn't ask for this language. Please turn on that thing. Some of us are black. Thank you.
I'm glad you guys heard Helmut's voice, not Dwight's voice on that one.
I kind of figured that from...
Helmut is alone taxable for that...
I gotta figure that out from from Francina.
Yeah.
She would either come and open the blinds, or the ring light, or both. That's when I realized, it's no way it's you, definitely yours truly here. But now, I feel like it's kind of it's getting monotonous now. At least for me, because every time that I've listened to to SADC and the African Union, today's main source of reference is obviously the African Union, African Union based discussion. Now this is the sixth African Union Technical Committee on social development, labor, and employment.
Yeah,
which social development alone. It's one heck of a topic, but when you combine social development, labor, and employment, the word employment, they should have started with the UN. Would have been spot on.
Are you not doing what the guy from I Took Africa said? Underemployment, unemployment.
Same WhatsApp group.
Because...
Yeah,
some of the key look. He was speaking definitely on a continent level to the facts.
Yeah,
and the facts obviously highlighting what we can assume, what we know locally, what we perceive an assumption past SADC can also include, and obviously representing Tukna, which is wrong union. It's because of the TUC. Tukna is Namibian.
Oh,
I took, which is this international trade conference or union of
a confederation
of unions, but that's the global name.
Yeah,
that's because
there's
an African division,
Dash Africa.
Yeah, and I took itself was also sort of like a merger of two major international global union. Platforms that had to merge together to become ITUC. So, it was an interesting thing that.
Did I look at the history of the wrong organization, or does the like the origin of, because it has basically transformed or more like changed form more than once?
Yeah.
But it can be traced back to what, the 1800s.
Yep, ITUC is pretty old, but. In the African context, it's fairly new, and we also have to understand in an African context, Helmut, regarding since 1960s, coming this way to 2026, that's 60, I'm lying. That's 80 years. Give or take. No, it's not 80 years.
80 years, that will take us to the 1940s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be in the 70s, between the 70s and the 60s.
Yeah.
In terms of the range. 70 to 60, or 60 to 70, they're about spare change years. Between 1960 and 2026, obviously, which would be 66 years. But when we look at that time frame, we as Africa have to learn a lot about what other countries have, for example, already had a template on.
Yeah.
And now they're just trying to re-achieve and regain that template during, obviously, a period that, you know, they had great particular negative, experiencing negative impacts. And on the other hand, you had countries that have had the opportunity to technically experience growing pains, develop certain systems, implement these systems, and continue onwards. Because it looked nice and all, Helmut. And I'll get to my particular personal pet peeve, but I hope my pet peeve is kept for, also contained for another discussion that we're going to have you on the home run as well. It will feature later on in this discussion during this session of the home run. But we're going to be looking obviously at African migration labor or migrant labor, which can include everything from, the guys trying the deadly, you know, transport methods there in North Africa to legitimate, African migrants going to find legitimate employment opportunities in Europe, in Asia, in North America, and even in Oceania, because these particular dimensions factor into this discussion also, primarily of social development, labor, and employment opportunities. Now, I have been sensitized, obviously, by a political scientist, that we also need to be aware of trade unionists, Helmut, because trade unionists or unionists are perceived as entities who are counter growth, counter change, counter adaptation. Yes, they do provide the basis to start off from. It's not an accusation, guys. Just go and evaluate yourself in terms of understanding certain things. Because when you look at new technology developments, obviously that will lead to one, in some scenarios, loss of employment and loss of earnings.
Yeah.
You always have to interrogate the why that this happened, not the attacking the person trying to get to the change. Yes, in some cases you do get, you know, sinister, I'll use the other political name, capitalistic tendencies. For example, you know, employers that just want to fire the whole staff contingent to just take all the money and run back to the country they come from. You do get situations like that, which has also happened in Namibia. Because I still remember the very famous case, specifically that mining company in Tumep at Independence, where much of the ownership of the company, I don't remember the acronym, the abbreviation of the company anymore, but at the start of in our independence at 1990, which was the very first case for the labor commissioners that was new, who were newly established at the time. They were established slightly later after 1990, meaning like 1 or 2 years. But what happened at the start of our independence at 1990 was that this company apparently closed up shop, fired everybody overnight, took the pensions and all the, you know, sort of like those benefits, those staff benefits, and ran off back to South Africa with all that money. And one of the things that the newly appointed labor commissioners at that stage had to start off with was dealing with that particular labor dispute. And that labor dispute saw people sitting in South Africa that you've got to, you know, try and bring to justice, and thus
extradition discussion comes in.
And it's not even on a criminal level, because now you're growing pains. You're a country newly independent. Now you've got to deal with major particular social fallouts.
Yeah.
Because one of the particular political contracts that exist is what are these parties? The parties that fought for independence.
Liberation movement.
Yeah, the liberation parties now have that their biggest test now is technically holding on to a solidarity framework and thus trying to achieve positive wins for the citizenry that they've now basically inherited. And that's some of the first cascading talking points that starts off, which technically features into this STC's particular overall ambit and mandate. Now, you saw the social development component of that small example and template I highlighted. And a secondary one that sprang out from that, obviously, was the unemployment dimension that led to the action that was necessary to be achieved. Now, we've got to understand now, as Namibia now moving forward from today, because Helmut, I will throw in a little bit of a gem here. Next week's oil and gas conference, and I'm not promoting a thing here that is not obviously advertising with us. Next week's oil and gas conference that starts on Monday. Do you know what's the theme? It's a very funny theme that they selected. And no, it's not to say that they are, you know, foreigners who came up with flashy themes to thinking, you know, it's all champagne and... What's that movie that Leonardo DiCaprio played in? I almost said The World According to Gap. What's the one's name, Tochman, where he played the flashy guy?
Catch Me If You Can?
No, the one that came out just before COVID or just after COVID. The guy that was trying to, he was trying to impress the lady. But because he was new money, she was from old money.
Oh.
So he had these lavish parties and stuff like that. It's not to say that there's such a particular thing, and that's what I want to say, you know,
yeah.
So as to also sensitize some of our listeners. But it's actually to look at a dimension of we are hyping something we don't have yet. We don't have yet. But we are hyping it in terms of the dimensions of how does it actually translate to every person in this country?
Yeah, but we have the scientific evidence that's coming from 300 kilometers offshore. And that, you know, the oil has been discovered. We're just crossing our fingers and hoping for the final investment decision. And
yeah.
Then after that, the subsequent production and money in your pocket. Now, the question...
Which has not been confirmed even. Money in our pocket.
Look, the thing is...
And we even proved that trickle-down doesn't work also.
The thing is, one of the actually interesting... and it's a good thing you brought up the whole oil discussion, not just the, on the event that is to be held, but the whole oil discussion discussion in Namibia. I find it fascinating how we're looking at... I find it fascinating how we're all looking forward to, you know, to the first production of oil, like it's the golden bullet that will solve all, most if not all, Namibia's economic, you know, economic issues, or at least a significant part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about natural resources here. This is not the first natural resource that's being extracted in the, you know, in this country. We have been extracting uranium, diamond, gold for decades.
Yeah.
Now, what I fail to see, okay, maybe I'm missing something, but what I don't understand is why are we so fixated on the first production of oil in reference to solving our economic problems? Because if we are looking at all the extractive resources that's already under extraction, if we have a problem translating the outcome, the economic outcome of the, of the natural resources that's already under extraction, if we have a problem translating that into the, social beneficiation of the, of an ordinary Namibian on the ground.
Yeah.
What makes us think we'll all of a sudden figure it out once we reach first production in terms of oil and gas?
And that is a million-dollar question, Albert, because...
Yeah, because, look, if we are terrible at, if we are terrible at sharing, and mind you, we are, again, we keep coming back to the, same elephant in the room here. We have been on the top list of economically unequal countries for a very long time. Now, that's why I'm saying, if we are terrible at sharing the proceeds of gold, diamond, copper, iron, and everything that's being mined, throw fish in that bucket.
Yeah.
If we are terrible at sharing the natural resources that have been extracted in this country for decades, what magic formula is going to make us figure everything out in terms of natural resource distribution to benefit an ordinary Namibian on the ground once we reach first production in the oil and gas?
Say. And now that the oil starts flowing.
We didn't figure it out with gold. We didn't figure it out with uranium, with copper.
We didn't figure it out with fish.
Actually, we went shopping for iPhones with two SIM cards.
Diamonds.
Diamonds. Actually, diamonds, especially last year's fiasco, is making, you know, the security guard life very difficult because now I don't know whether I'm protecting these diamonds from Tura boys or CEOs. Because more often, a bunch of thieves are the CEOs.
Or chartered accountants.
Now, look, for me, that's the giant question. That's the elephant in the room. We have, and this is not just for Namibia. This is the entire African continent. We're talking about, okay, let's process the natural resources at home, natural resources beneficiation, skills development. All these are very good. All these are very nice. But when you are having this discussion from, you know, from a position of countries like Namibia and South Africa, that brings, a discussion that I believe we are not having enough. We just keep, you know, beating around the bush of, guys, yes, the oil has been discovered. We have a lot of, you know, scientific minds and investment brains, or, you know, on the ground, more like at this point, on the ocean. But how can we correct the wealth distribution and natural resources process distribution that we haven't clearly figured out with regards to other natural resources? Because if we didn't figure it out with gold and copper and other natural resources, including uranium and others, I don't think we are going to all of a sudden miraculously figure it out once we start pumping oil. We'll just be talking about, you know what, now that we started production, let's give it another 30 years. And then those 30 years will lapse, and then we'll push it again to another 30 years. And the economic inequality, and you know, it's just going to grow bigger and bigger. And then you see the cascading events now that was pointed out by, you know, by Governor McNab in Hardap region. You know, there's a cascading events here. First of all, crime seems to be on the increase. One of the contributing factor to the you know, observed contributing factor to crime is drug abuse. One of the contributing factor to people taking drugs is social issues, which includes unemployment. So if you just look at them separately, take, for example, a crime, unemployment, and drug abuse, you think they are separate things, but they feed into each other.
They actually connect to each other.
And, oh, shout out to the government. I mean, that part was gold. So, gold, I mean, oil, excellent, excellent. I mean, let's just hype it up. But my point is, if we are terrible at sharing the proceeds of uranium, we will just be equally terrible at sharing the proceeds of oil. So,
which is a good starting point, because, I mean, it's a good thing, Helmut, before we got to this discussion, that we looked at the State of the Region addresses, the four that we've looked at, because the four actually give also one of my biggest pet peeves. Just like that. The biggest pet peeves that exist is primarily how do you connect impacts of projects that are found within these regions with the community members in these regions, the citizens of those regions, specifically as they are. And the biggest drawback is that we now also have to go into an overdrive specifically to try and train Namibians. But I always come back to the biggest block, the biggest hurdle, the biggest demotivating factor for many Namibians who come to Windhoek, experience city life. And now you've got to tell them, yeah, your welding job is in Lüderitz. Your bricklaying job is in Korekas. Your plumbing job is in Enana. I'm mentioning these places, it's not to look down on them specifically, But to cite primarily that if that young Namibian came to Windhoek, experienced the life of Windhoek and all the nice things of Windhoek, now they've got to look forward to a place primarily where their only particular entertainment might be at the bottom of a beer bottle, if it's beer that they're just going to be consuming, or, you know, a local brew that is, you know, procured and consumed locally. The reason why I cite these particular things is literally what Helmut cited, that Governor McNab also cited in his Hardop address, is we've got to look at the social issues that compound the issues manifesting in those same societies that everybody has to now contend with. Social issues. And I came from another public engagement today, Helmut, one about the space science bill, space science and technology bill. And there was a lady just before I left who asked the question about astrotourism, that thing that you and I looked at last week, the one about looking at the stars in the sky and all that. And she asked the question specifically there about how does what lawmakers, decision makers, stakeholders, community members participate in the compilation of a draft of a bill, how does that translate to actual benefits on the ground?
Yeah.
Now, what is outstanding in the oil and gas and sort of like in the extraction industries is that those amendments to the Petroleum Act that you and I dissected at the start of the year, then we've got to develop our own synthetic fuels legislation. We've got to update a couple of other pieces of legislation that have to tie into them. We've got to, and then other related, you know, not directly impacting, but related legislation like, the data protection, cybersecurity legislation. Those things also need to be updated.
Yeah.
And in every scenario, if you ask the question about pace, speed, timeline, time frame, deadlines, and all that, you can see that everything is going to take probably the next 10 years on all that updating of legislation that I just now spoke about. Because what was the biggest concern just before Parliament went for recess, because Parliament is currently in recess, the biggest concern was how quick and how fast bills are being passed.
Point of correction, how slow they're being passed.
No, I asked that so that you can see the opposite of it.
Yeah.
So how quick that is taking place, which is quick is a bit of a hopeful expression, which is technically it is sluggish. It is sluggish.
Yeah, it is sluggish.
So now we got to ask the question in terms of the overall picture of Namibia. And this also stems from the opinion piece that we had in the Villager recently, or not recently, it was in last month in July. An opinion piece written by one of our colleagues, Kanjengo, who cited primarily that if we look at conferences, these public engagements and so on, that's why I'm now more into the public engagements on the draft legislation that is to be anticipated in the next couple of years. I'm now a lot more in that public engagement scenario, because if we have to look at a conference that has the same theme as last year, not the exact same words, but you can see the theme sounds similar to the previous year's theme, then you can ask yourself the question, where's this conversation going to go? Where is this conversation going? Who are we speaking to? That's the first thing. The first question is, where is this conversation going? The second one is, who are we speaking to? Meaning in terms of audience, or not us as Eagle FM. I'm talking about obviously these conference hosts and the entities that own the copyrights around that particular promotional activity. Where are these conversations going? What goals do you aim to achieve? Are we viewing these public engagements as telltale signs of I performed? Now my job is done.
We're just doing everything for, you know, so that we can complete all the paperwork and submit and, as proof that we actually held this event, we spent this amount of money so that we don't have to return everything to the treasury.
Yeah. So,
so it's basically one giant all protocol observed.
Yes. Once again, the dimension for this, Helmut, is because we've got to ask ourselves, where do these performance parameters go to? who goes and assesses what did you do at the end during 2026?
Yeah.
Who's doing this? And I've sat through, you know, assessments like that. I mean, Helmut, it's nerve-wracking. Have you ever seen how people walk out, you know, highly unhappy because it's a ranking system? It's literally, what is that thing that we'd learned in research methodology? It's a rating system. So, because it's qualitative, you might have the employment contract of things, né?
Yeah.
But now the HR department has to convert what you signed on in your employment contract into this rating ranking system. And based upon that, that's going to determine sort of like your bonus or your salary increase at the end of the year. There was one guy who was so angry. His increase, that was back in 2010, translated, and he's still alive, don't worry. I won't mention names. Translated to like a $300. And the guy was angry. And the guy said, "What is that $300? I looked at him. I didn't want to be sarcastic because I'd already early on developed my sarcasm. Didn't want to be sarcastic because I could see the anger in his eyes. And I said, "You know what? It's probably, you know, that box of chicken that you buy every month from that chicken supplier." You know, there was a supplier going from offices to offices selling like these frozen chicken, you know. But these whole chickens. And then you would have like a supply of chicken for the month. And he was really unhappy when he equated his salary increase to one box of chicken. One box. It had literally like 12 whole chickens stacked in it.
Yeah.
But it was one box of chicken. A frozen chicken. And I felt unhappy, Helmut, because at that stage, Dwight was still, you know, well, I was like 27-ish or 26. The economics and the math were still at the background of all my cognitive processes, you know, besides the doing the work.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too unhappy. But when, as you become older, you now start asking those pertinent questions about where's your life going? Where's the economy of Namibia going? Yeah. Where is various other kinds of directions of Namibia heading off to? For example, like what can you anticipate in the next 5 years? NDB6 lays a foundation for, you know, this period of 5 years. But then things are currently highly volatile. NDB6 was hoping for no Iran war taking place.
Yeah.
But you can clearly see NDB6 didn't anticipate for an Iran war. It's not a natural disaster, but to Namibia, it counts like a natural disaster.
Yeah.
How are we going to mitigate this, Helmut? Even though, what's his name? Minister Amutse highlighted that emergency fuel supply measures that need to be in place to basically, you know, mitigate fluctuations in the fuel price, which is still going to be, there's still going to be pressure on us, the consumers. And I am glad the government now realizes that whatever happens in extractive industries, how naked Namibia is, how naked we are. And it doesn't even flow through South Africa to us. It doesn't ping like this, like what the one-to-one rand, the one-to-one currency maintenance project is. No, this is something purely based upon how fuel determines the pain or the alleviation of that pain in this economy. Just the price of fuel. The thing that this whole economy runs on. Not private sector credit extension, fluff talk. I was going to use a different word, but I had to stop myself. Not private sector credit extension, fluff discussions, Helmut. The aspect in terms of how impactful tax is, because tax happens only after, you know, you've earned your salary or your income. No, this is primarily highlighting the game that we want to get into. Now, cascading into the social development discussion. What are we going to do to avoid that? To avoid this that we've been in since, how long has this war been on? It's apparently 165 days up until yesterday. or the day before?
Now the Iran US Israel war.
Yeah. Since February.
For those guys, I mean, I've lost counting at this point. Look, you know, one of the biggest problem that this is why I like to look at these things from a regional perspective.
Yeah.
Because every time I try to look at the challenges that Namibia is, that we are experiencing as a country, I see that there are a lot of African countries, and if not basically the entire developing world, that are experiencing the exact same thing. Now, the fact that we are categorized as developing countries, that means we have a lot of economic pushing to do for us to reach a level where everyone is taken care of, at least when it comes to laying out especially social safety nets that we see in a lot of developed countries, especially the Scandinavian countries.
Yeah.
Now, that's a known fact. You don't have to be a legal, financial, or economic expert to basically know that we have a lot of economic pushing to do. But I think the most obvious thing should be, how do we address all the challenges that's leading to, to drain the little resources that we have, especially illicit financing?
Mm.
Yeah. Now, illicit financing is one interesting discussion, because I had it from SADC anti-corruption representatives when they met last month in South Africa, I believe, and the 45th ordinary session of the Executive Council of the African Union again last month,
yeah.
And that's also something that was interesting enough. That's also something that Akato Jewel Adiji, the General Secretary of the African Regional Organization of the International Trade Union Confederation, ITAC Africa. He also referenced the illicit financing.
And you say ITAC or ITUC?
ITUC. I mean, it really applies to Africa. I stole. But look.
What? You I stole?
Well, that sounds like I took.
We didn't apply for the jokes today, ne? Just letting you know. There's a quota today. But yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, anyway. I took your fish jokes aside. Now, I took your diamonds. I mean, I'm glad this event was held in Namibia.
What? Okay, let's restart. You said... Yeah. Let's go with ITAC.
Yeah. No, man, we are not American. It's ITUC. The elephant in the room we're not addressing is, first, we have got to patch all the economic holes.
Mm.
Yeah. So that the little resources we have can be utilized or can be applied to, as best as possible.
Yeah.
Every time I think about this, it reminds me of the time when I was in high school. We were put in, it was an entrepreneurship project.
Yeah.
So we were put in different groups, and we're told to contribute, I think, about $5 a member. And then we bought, we're asked to buy basically anything that we can sell, and then make a profit on top of what we, on top of the amount of money that we used to buy the product.
Yeah.
And then, basically compile a report and do a presentation on it. So, we bought a box of sweets, like your smoothies. Yeah. So, we made a profit of about $5-7. But the thing is, there was a 50 cents that was unaccounted for. Now, then there was a lot of, tension in the group as to, who is responsible for the missing 50 cents. So, and then.
But you had a suspicion. Right?
Everyone had their suspicion. Now, there's one thing.
Was it one person that everybody agreed upon?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just didn't want to start violence. But one lady actually just took a 50 cent out of her pocket just to settle the dispute,
mm.
and then decided to add it to the money. And well, everything was fine. Now, the teacher now overheard that.
Mm.
So he set us down and he told us, okay, now before, I mean, it was very noble of you, now just talking to the lady, that it was very noble of you to take the money out of your pocket to make up for the shortfall that your business is lacking.
Yeah.
But the first thing you first have to figure out is, how did you lose that money so that you cannot do that again? Because what if it happens again and that time it's now $10 that's missing? Mm. I'm gonna take $10 and then add it to the money, and then the next day it's $100 missing. So you're not really solving the problem.
You know that I did the same thing, Hamoud.
Yeah.
Also, because it was a specific account that was outstanding. So I was the supervisor at the time. I said, okay, to settle the account, I'll put the $10 down. The whole finance department was on my head. Why did you do this, Dwight? I explained to them, listen, for your work to move on and for us to move on from this point, because now you guys want to hold forensic investigation
of a missing $10.
But it's a missing $10.
Yeah.
I'll settle the $10 so that we move on from this point.
Yeah.
But then we needed to talk to the colleague, the employee at the time, and ask them, listen, you got to manage a particular situation yourself. No one will come again past this point,
bail you out,
and help you once again. This was just on an account, Albert. It was technically money outstanding. And dimensions like this, like what that teacher shared with you guys, is absolutely the best course of action. It's the same experiment that exists. What was that experiment that they apparently helped to determine who are psychopaths? Where they ask you, you are riding a train. You are the conductor, the driver of a train. On the left of the train track is a little child.
Yeah.
And on the right of the train track is an old person. If the train is about to get into an accident, in which direction will you crash the train? And remember, in which direction you crash it will lead to the death of either one of these two people.
Yeah.
And then apparently people were caught out for, if they went for the elderly person, sacrificing the elderly person to save the young life, or the young life to sacrifice the elderly person, which partially highlighted some people might have some psychological issues. But the correct
conundrum, though.
But the correct answer
was,
why must I crash? And why must I choose who must live or die? Because you're asking the question of why did this situation come about? And why am I given this decision to make?
So address the problem from the root cause. So you don't have to, to find yourself in a situation where you'll be forced to make that decision.
Exactly. Now, it's the same thing that you can sometimes also find like in accounting and basic financial business financial operations.
Yeah.
Make sure that if you're selling something, the customer gives the whole price for the product.
Yeah.
And that all your monies are tallied up for and accounted for, which is a very good example that what's his name? Shared that with you, the teacher.
Mr. Hosiku. He had a problem with anyone that's sitting in the corner. If you're in his class and you sit in the corner, the first question that he comes up with, you're the one that's answering it.
That's his first statement. Before he asks the question.
In the teaching process, if there's a question that comes up, his go-to guy is corner. Give us the answer.
Why corner?
Yeah, I don't know. He just didn't like people sitting in the corner. Just come to the front. Don't run away. And which is actually not very a big, it's not, it wasn't a very big venture friendly class. Yeah, but it's very cool.
And you know what is why I'm laughing?
Yeah,
because all the teachers I've had in high school always arranged us in alphabetical order. And because of my surname, L was always at the back. You either end the row, or you start in front in a corner in front. But you're never like middle or front unless you go to one of those teachers who they allow you to sit wherever you want to.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I slightly laughed, because if he was that kind of a teacher, all of us would definitely have been sitting in front.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta love high school. But so how do we settle the issues here of social protection? Because we talk about inclusivity, and look, I'm glad this whole conference was had, this whole discussion was held in Africa, not in Africa. Well, it's an Africa-based event, but it was held in Namibia. Because we have one giant elephant in the room that we are not addressing as, you know, one giant elephant in the room that we are not addressing as a country. And that is, what is the cause? And this is very true for Namibia and South Africa. What is the cause of the, you know, of the economic inequality? Unless you tell me we are just proud that we are constantly at the top of the list of the, you know, countries that are economically unequal on the planet, not even on the continent, on the planet. Because if we are not, you know, if we are not proud of that, we, you know, we should be having a discussion around, okay, yeah, sure, okay, this is the problem that we have. This is the problem that we have. We have an economic inequality issue. Translation, we are terrible at sharing the little resources we have. Those that are in close proximity to the said resources are basically hoarding everything for themselves. Leaving those that do not have that don't have the close proximity to the resources with little to nothing. So that's where we find ourselves. That's where we have been. And I know that discussion is most likely going to dive in a history of of apartheid and colonialism. But it doesn't matter when the problem started. But it's for me about what we are doing right now to address the issue. Now, again, this again is one of those things that should be addressed on a continental level. If you are a father, uncle, guardian, mother, you know, a guardian, whatever you are, and you are responsible for the lives of your younger ones in a family, and every day they are going to eat at someone's house, doesn't that bother you? Because any reasonable parent will be bothered as to why his or her kids, or why their kids are always running away to someone's house to go and look for food. That's basically, well, Africa's majority of the youth. A lot of them are literally swimming across the ocean to go and find opportunities halfway across the planet. Now, if I was in public office, not just for Namibia, but the whole African continent, I would be asking myself one question. Why is this? I mean, back in 2024, the Italian Prime Minister had to come up with a whole Mattei plan of investing in, putting up, large sums of money and then investing it in countries where a large number of immigrants are coming from to flood the, to flood basically her country. And her idea was, we're going to take money and then invest this money in the countries where these young people are coming from, so that they can have job opportunities. So that, the reason why and it's a very simple math. If the reason why they're coming here is job opportunities, how about we just take money and then invest it in their country so that, well, we basically take job opportunities to their countries so that they don't have to come. When someone is coming up with that idea, a leader of a country is coming up with that idea for the whole continent, we have to admit, you'll have a problem. Now, of course, hilariously, representing the African Union at the time, at this event, the Italy-Africa Summit, was Moussa Faki Mahamat. And, one of the things that he just said in response to the Mattei plan, basically, or the entire Africa, Italy-Africa discussion, because that in January 2024, was, Europe have got to walk the talk. They must stop talking and start acting. Well, not surprising, that's part of the speech that went mainstream. Because it's ridiculous Creating opportunities for your people is not my responsibility. It's your responsibility. Now, how do I create opportunities for my own people? We will create employment. I mean, we hear that a lot when people are running for office. And let's just look at Namibia. 30 plus years later, there are people that are still falling for that crap. We will create employment. Rather, how? Now, I'm not disputing your idea of creating employment. I have no doubt you can create employment. But do you mind walking me through how you're going to do that? That we don't do that. We just, we just clap our hands. So, social safety nets are needed. And these social safety nets must be basically thought out at this point, from a STC discussion point of view. It must be addressed on a continental level. Now, there's something I want to point out.
Point it. But it's a good thing you started there.
Yeah, in their 2023 editorial piece, or more like an opinion piece.
Yeah.
Now, let me just say, Kavadewa Kashomwife. Now, that's coming from a United Nations Office of Special Advisor in Africa. And the name sounds very Kashomwite. Where does that sound like Kashomwite? Anyway, in this 2023 op-ed, one thing that they observed is, there are two actually individuals that wrote this piece, and they work for the United Nations Office of Special Advisor on Africa, or OSA. And they wrote that over the last decade, remittance flow to Africa doubled, reaching 100 billion in 2022,
yeah.
About 1.7 trillion Namibian dollars, give or take, surpassing the funds received through official development assistance and foreign direct investment. But this is a good thing. Remittance is a good thing. But these people that are sending this money back home to account for this amount of money on a continental level, how are they getting there? By literally being smuggled. A lot of them.
Okay, not all of them.
But a lot of them are having to swim.
Being smuggled?
Yeah. They have to be, like, look.
I know. I'm slightly defending those that are, honest Johns and Janes, who actually buy the ticket, get the passport, and actually fly there.
Yeah.
And get employed there. Oh, besides now, for those Namibians who are persona non grata with the UK.
Oh no, man. Don't start. Look.
They are part of this, Helmut. They are part of this dimension.
I know, man. Look, we have a lot of academics, we have a lot of academics like you and I like to, to reference that. Every time that we, a lot of academics are being interviewed on the things that's taking place, whether economical or political on the African continent, these are experts from Africa, but they are being interviewed out of Europe. Those are, if you ask me, and some of those people that are, contributing to the remittance.
Which is a bit funny that you say that, because when, what's this guy, the mayor of New York?
Mamdani.
Yeah, but his father, Mahmoud.
Yeah.
When his father was interviewed for that book interview back in June, May, that I watched the video, it was a new book that he brought out in April.
Yeah.
And the lady interviewing him is an academic. She's from Zimbabwe, but she lives and works in London. And he was in London because he was busy promoting this new book of his. And he said yes to this book discussion about his new book at this particular venue in London, which is at the London School of Economics. No, it's not at LSE. It was at another one. And he said yes. Now, the funny thing is, both of them live and work outside of Africa, which feeds into your point. Both of them work and live. Mamdani, who's technically Ugandan, even though he's American, technically Ugandan, and his father, who's still, I think they technically the parents live in Canada, I think, just speaking under correction.
Yeah.
And what you see from these situations is there are Africans who have the capability to immigrate from the continent. There's a whole bunch of South Africans that went to Australia, to England, yeah, to the US. Okay, besides was now the ones that jumped on Trump's refugee scheme situation, where the Americans thought that they were getting skilled Africans undercome. These people wanted to come and just live off a system. There are accounts where some of those perceived,
yeah,
refugees, the one example that exists is a family that they sort of like took in this South African family, a guy, his wife, and the two little kids.
Yeah.
And the South Africans literally one day, because they were given a side of the yard to,
yeah,
live in,
yeah,
which had like its own dwelling. And the Americans, the owners of the property, went on holiday for the weekend. The owner of the house was called like the Sunday. It's like, are you moving?
What were they doing?
The South Africans carried, they literally carried out the entire house of these people.
Isn't that stealing?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Under Donald Trump's idea, this plan, this refugee scheme situation, they thought they were getting like the top-notch South Africans.
Anyone that fell for that crap, just either gullible, naive, or both, because you know you are nuts when even the people that you want to repatriate, and I'm talking about white South Africans here, that stood in the Oval Office with with Ramaphosa and telling Trump, there is no genocide in South Africa.
And they were told.
And you had a bunch of people that hopped on a plane to, you know what? We have a commercial break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, my. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of 5. You're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today's main source of reference is the discussion that took place on the 27th, from the 27th to the 31st of July, here in Windhoek. And so Namibia was hosting the 6th ordinary session of the African Union Specialized Technical Committee on social development, labor, and employment. And, it wouldn't be an African event if it didn't have a theme. So, as always, in the spirit of Ubuntu.
Of themeness. No, not yeah. Ubuntu-ness. It's themeness.
Of theming.
Theming.
No, let's go with, themeness, because, theming sounds like thiefing, so it's not a good picture. Not a good picture.
Today is not your day, Amun.
I know. So the theme is investing, strengthening, and expanding social protection system in Africa.
a critical enabler for inclusion, resilience, and social justice. And I'm glad they had the word inclusive in there. And I'm glad in the theme. And I'm glad they had they held the event in Namibia, because we ran around yapping about inclusivity, all kinds of, you know, political inclusivity, gender inclusivity, all kinds of inclusivity. There is one type of, you can't have, look, inclusivity and economic inequality cannot coexist.
Yes.
Yeah. You have, you know, inclusive financing technology that would like to advance so that anyone has access to the fastest, more secure and technological advanced way of moving money from point A to point B. That's a brilliant idea.
Yes.
But again, the elephant in the room, economic inequality, doesn't sound very much like inclusive to me.
Which was also the financial inclusion discussion you and I had, which David also had on the radar, which helped to cement how... And remember, these are not people that we voted for. Just letting you guys know. How... The public officials, not the ministers.
Yeah.
Not the ministers. For now, guys, you the ministers, you guys are out of that loop. You're not to blame. How the public officials translate, interpret inclusivity, for example, to an unemployed person.
Yeah.
You see, Hamoud, out of this whole conversation of this STC, the Special Technical Committee that was missing,
yeah,
up until the Friday, which I was so disappointed in realizing that that report,
yeah,
it's based on up until 2022 statistics. There's no 2023, 4, 5, and even 6, yeah, statistics. I even had to ask the lady dealing out, it was a little business card that had the QR code on it that you, yeah, could download the report from immediately. I even asked her, is this correct? Is this the current report that our minister Kantema was standing on the stage for? And she said, yeah, it's the right report. Now, first things first that you and I know of, is relativity of data. How relative is this data at the platform that you are showcasing the data? So now we're sitting with information that's 4 years out of date. 4 years away from...
A lot have changed from 2023 onwards to, yeah, 2026. Yeah.
And specifically in a Namibian context, in 2023, a year after 2022, we had our census.
Yeah.
So
that means those statistics were based on the 2011.
If Namibia features there,
yeah,
it's outdated on 2011 population.
Like it's way out of date.
Yeah, it's the 2018 labor force survey, is also outdated technically. Technically, in this discussion, they are information sets that you've got to ignore completely.
Yeah,
you've got to completely ignore them. But now, we in Namibia know our situation. Do the other African countries resonate the same particular insight that you and I are currently identifying here? Because when we say data is crucial to decision making,
yeah,
that STC at the end of its week, not the opening speeches of where we the media were chased out just before lunch, you guys must not see the voting process because I heard there 7 countries are sanctioned. So
yeah,
it was 55 minus 7. And I was even wondering, who's number 55? Which country is number 55, you saw? I thought they were 54. But, you know,
African Union. I'm pretty sure they were counting Western Sahara.
I'm digressing. Or they might give... No, they're almost against Somaliland, ne?
Yeah, but there are 4.
But there are 4 Western Sahara,
yes. This is why I like to say, when people say politics is boring, I don't get it, because
the contradiction.
The contradiction.
The contradiction is the biggest cricket match that takes place there.
Let's respect the borders that were drawn during colonial times to ensure that we don't have a squabble over which part of the, you know, of the landmass should we draw the line between two different countries.
And then you've got South Africa,
yeah,
with its politicians shouting, some of its politicians shouting, open up the borders, and then the same politicians are the ones not defending the African foreigners in their country. So why do you want borders removed if your whole country, mm-hmm, is anti
other African?
No, I think the best answer to that, you know, if I may borrow Mlemba's words here, cheap political points.
Yes.
And these cheap political points only work because a lot of people keeps falling for them, because they don't actually look at what is coming out of, you know, a lot of these political campaigns.
Yeah.
And a lot of them like to... You know, if you look at them, basically, if you look at a lot of things that's said in a lot of political campaigns, you'll find that a lot of them are contradicting in a lot of ways. Because you can't say, open the borders, let's conduct intra-Africa trade, intra-Africa travel, and then you turn around and say, let them get out of our country. Like, how?
Yeah.
Because if you have Africa Continental Free Trade Area, that means trade and travel.
Yeah. And it includes people facilitating this.
Yeah.
Now, here's another contradiction, Hamoud, and I'm going to show you another, like, insight into, like, the kind of politics that's taking place in South Africa. And last week, I saw a short little video of Jacob Zuma at a public engagement there in KwaZulu-Natal.
Yeah.
He wearing that MK party shirt.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Zuma is most similar to Trump. They don't complete a sentence, a train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
They start... And then the train of thought doesn't end. You know, the point is not made.
Yep.
The conclusion, you don't see the full stop at the
end. Fly away.
They start and then they deviate and the deviation deviates further. And then you are deviating and you don't know what the original starting point was. And
yeah.
So he starts.
Very typical, you know, that's very typical in ADHD individuals.
I hope I don't get to that platform when I'm old. But Zuma started a sentence by saying, there was this young boy we had here in the party. And everybody was like,
okay.
No, but everybody was like, but he asked the question, who was that guy? That guy that we brought here. And then he heard Boyd. He said, he said, Pot. No, Floyd. Oh, you mean Floyd? So he was talking about Floyd Chivambo, for those of you guys that don't know. So he even forgot the name of the guy that he convinced to join from EFF to MK. And then he says, but Floyd didn't like the idea that I was proposing. That's his words now. And the idea that he says is the agenda that MK has for South Africa is that there's a council. Helmut, listen to this. Listen to this rubbish. This potentially inflammatory rubbish. That there's a council of traditional leaders between parliament and cabinet and the president.
That's interesting.
Do you know why I say it's rubbish?
Uh-huh.
Because Zuma is closely affiliated to the Zulu king. And remember, Ntlakandla is built in the kingdom of the Zulus.
Yeah, I remember.
He's highly affiliated to the Zulu monarchy. Zuma.
Yeah.
Ne? Now, the Zulu kingdom and their land in KwaZulu-Natal was negotiated even before 1921. You know, after the First World War, when South Africa stepped away from being a dominion of the UK.
Mm.
So, in terms of even before, like the Oudendal Plan and all the Group Areas Act discussions and so on, the Zulus already had a privilege. Something similar to, like, look at Botswana. Botswana was also a protectorate. So the Zulus also negotiated a treaty with the British, which cascaded into, you know, South Africa fully, which was also the same thing that Lesotho and Eswatini negotiated. So there were these protectorates that these specific traditional authorities went and negotiated with the British. So everyone else was now exposed.
Hang on a second. So is that one of the reasons why they are like high up in the central government structure?
It's one of the reasons because you can see the obvious advantage of his plan. His plan is technically that basically the Zulu king can dictate terms and conditions that impacts all South Africans. Now, the Zulus in South Africa are the largest ethnicity.
Yeah, but take, for example, the whole idea of having, you know, having this more like a side-to-side in terms of administrative activities between the traditional authorities and central government representatives. If they were to work together, wouldn't that mean that you will have to have representatives from all traditional authorities?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now,
because now that's how it's pictured. Because if you can, if you are going to have one, the traditional authorities are going to leave out are going to ask a lot of questions.
But it's not
side and to side. Those are irrational questions.
His suggestion is not side to side.
His suggestion is
that this council of traditional authority leaders
are
superior to the people you vote for.
No, that's just that would be like saying let's just become a monarchy because that's what it comes at that point.
And that they are between the president and cabinet, legislative, and now here's the thing.
Yeah.
Whose constitution are they going to follow? That's the first. I always start from a constitutional point.
It will have to be the South African constitution because Namibia and South Africa operate on the legal principle of the rule of law, which means the law takes primary, not the president or the presidency or any individual or organization.
Now, Hamoud, what is the first problem with technically people who inherit power?
That's going to have. Which is why I'm saying, which is why I'm referencing monarchy.
Yeah.
Because if you have, take for example, if you have a council of traditional leaders, and they are on top of your public representatives, that is going to rattle a lot of democratic feathers because a lot of people, including especially, especially governance expert, will be asking a very simple question. How different is this from a monarchy?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be very different because you have a top level leadership that that's based on inheritance and then you have a public representative below it. That's
that everyone else votes for.
That's basically a monarchy that you are dealing with because you can vote as much as possible for the people at the bottom, but the top.
And if the Zulu king decides to mobilize the whole Zulus in the country on his behalf, would that not technically bring a country into chaos?
The chaos is I think where. If, and that's a man-sized if, that let's say this whole thing was to come to be, you are most likely to have, we're talking about power here, and the power is very toxic, and if it's not well-controlled, which is why we have a bunch of legislations to keep it in check. So if you're going to have a council of traditional authorities, you're going to have to come up with some type of vote and veto. Because if you take these two out of the equation, and you have the board of peace type of structure, it becomes very dictatorial.
And Orban is now out of the board of peace because now it's that other guy who's looking to technically reform his entire country.
Yeah.
Did you hear what he did with the national broadcaster and all the national broadcasters in Hungary?
Oh, what did
he do? He told the program, I want to be on this program at this time of the hour with that presenter who's presenting the show.
Yeah.
And then he told the presenter to her face, I'm going to defund this organization until this organization reforms to become an actual public broadcaster.
Okay.
Instead of being a mouthpiece of one political party.
Now, that is a... that's not helping the picture.
Exactly.
It's not helping because the picture you are, the picture you are sending here is... It's a revenge. Two, anyone that disagrees with you is
will do the same thing. It's a cycle of violence the whole time.
Yeah, because
passive aggressiveness, but it's violence.
That's just a soft. That's a soft media coup, because the picture that you are drawing here is you are above the law. Because there are certain, I'm pretty sure there are certain legal channels on how to discipline a media house or an individual working for a media house.
A state broadcast.
Because if they operate the same way that we operate here, which I'm assuming we do because, these are not the 1500s, you have acts of parliament, which basically lays the foundation of how an institution is introduced, is operated, or and how the leadership is, the transition take place and all these things. Now, when you have the top level of the executive branch just shows up and say something like that, I'm assuming you are undermining a dozen of acts of parliament, which is going to make everyone just step back and go like, yeah, this guy is going full dictatorship here.
He's not even there yet, Hamon. He does have a good, I call it a good reason.
Yeah.
It's because of the kind of publicity that was spread about him while he was contesting against Viktor Orban.
So it's a revenge, yeah.
Which, that's why I call it revenge. Was primarily that, what's his name? Maigar or Magyar, one of the two pronunciations. He has a major bone to pick with most of the state media of Hungary.
Okay, so now you're using executive power for revenge.
Yeah.
That doesn't make you very different from the people that you are revenging yourself from. Because everyone will be like, a lot of people will just conclude either that's just a pure amateur or you are just exactly similar to the people that you are revenging yourself, you are avenging. If not worse.
But remember, it's Hungary's situation. It's there.
I mean, politics is very interesting though, because
and it has real impact specifically like on the public sector.
This is basically the same question that I was asking. When a lot of opposition parties here in Namibia are talking about forming a coalition to go against the ruling party.
Yeah.
Now, if you can make the coalition and go against the ruling party, I'm pretty sure you can do that. But then the thing is, for a lot of people that I basically had a conversation with on this topic, one thing they kept pointing out was that, you know what, they made defeating the ruling party the primary goal, which I'm like, if your main goal is defeating a party, then that doesn't really leave enough room for developmental discussion.
Yeah.
Because the goal about running for office is not because if my main goal is just to defeat Dwight. Okay, now,
So now that you've achieved your goal, now?
I will win the election. You are defeated out of office. Now what?
Yeah.
You don't know a thing about the developmental, projects that's going on in that country because your entire time you were running for that office, you were hell-bent on revenge.
Your manifesto doesn't include anything about SDGs or maintaining SDGs.
Because your entire goal was to get even.
Yeah. Or your entire goal was just to get there.
Yeah.
Without motivating to the electorate, why do you want to get there? What is there that you wish to change? So, the context obviously that exists outside of Namibia and factoring into this STC discussion is that if you look at the STC dimension, which is what the guy from ITUC Africa also highlighted, the underemployment, unemployment, and also the inequality that's present, there was a let me get that article that I wrote that we did not use in the e-paper. Just if listeners wish to know what I wrote,
running looking for it, and it's not there yet.
Yeah, it was more than a not running there yet Helmut situation. But
yeah.
So this particular point, I just want to read it quickly for the listeners. So his name is Joel Odigie, the Secretary General from the International Trade Union Confederation, ITUC Africa. He explained that inflation is eroding wages, household income, the ranks of the working poor is on the uptick, and this is growing, while underemployment, unemployment, and inequality continues to deepen poverty and insecurity. Odisha added that nearly 9 in 10 jobs on the African continent is in the informal sector.
Yeah.
He also added on that fewer than 1 in 5 Africans have access to social protection, which you already cited. Now, the reason I wanted to chime in there on that point when you cited the social protection dimension. So Namibia, if we list off the obvious social protection measures that exist, dear listeners, we've got the old age grant, which is social protection. We have the orphans and vulnerable children grant. We've got people living with disability grant. Now, these three, they are the known particular interventions, and you can call them conditional grants. I call them conditional grants because they are conditions that have to be met. Yeah. You will have to fill in a form which will cite these conditions to basically make you eligible or determine whether you're eligible or not to receive said particular grant.
Yeah.
Then you've got the other particular interventions that would then come about, like Social Security. But Social Security is a funny one because us men, we don't get it easily. I'll be honest with you guys, we can't give birth, so we can't claim maternity or maternal whatever dimension there from that, and we can only access the Social Security money, which is also another particular condition, if you are 60 and above. Yeah. So it's also a condition that you've got to meet. So that technically means that Social Security, dear listeners, and I'll say it again, is technically discriminatory against our gender. We have to face this reality, guys. A lot of us in the formal economy of Namibia, we pay Social Security, but we don't see any particular benefit from paying for it, even when you become 60 as a man. That's the particular downside. So technically, Social Security, you know, in great lengths, should become like that direct intervention that helps with the, you know, with a basic income grant dimension. But I'm just spitballing on that dimension because, you know, I didn't do my own maths or own particular calculations on that. Just suggesting it because it has the word social in it. So social would imply everybody in society. Then you've got the pensions that operate within the country, but they are also conditional because they are labor-related or employment-related. The potential is there for the Sovereign Wealth Fund to play a particular role, but it's until we understand what the Act, which is still to be drafted for the bill to govern the item or this vehicle that exists already, it's functioning already. But now we have to come up with the bill for this thing. So what will be put in the bill?
What it is already doing?
No, it's just so far collecting money and interest. So it's just sitting there with 400 million in its kitty. But how did we start something without doing the legislation?
Shows
one of the few good things that Namibia can do without ruffling any feathers, without getting Namibians angry. We start something, and then we now have to go and discover we need legislation to govern this thing. So we did one good thing there, but it's a vehicle that's just accumulating money.
Yeah.
Then I'm not going to talk about GIPF for the love of everything good on this planet. I'm not going to talk about GIPF, guys, because it's a pension fund like the private sector pension funds, and it's conditional. If you don't work for the government, why must I entertain this discussion? Let's also be honest, Amut. You won't get GIPF money, Amut. I'll let you know. Unless you join government. I won't get GIPF
money. Now I'm looking to joining government anytime. But although seeing that after 2-3 years of home run, I don't see that waking up.
You know, I think we didn't do ourselves favors.
No, we didn't.
So, Helmut and I, technically, we know we're disqualified.
We don't stand a chance.
So we don't have to talk about...
They want to walk in a public office for an interview. They, you know, what's your name? Dwight. Aha.
Oh, is it you? Is this the face that loves throwing bricks at us?
So it's you. Question number one of the interview. Please sing the Chinese national anthem. Yeah. And what does that have to do with anything?
No, we just want comic relief. That's all. But anyway, so the next particular concern would be, you see these conditionalities permeating through Namibia.
Yeah.
And that's now in the social safety framework of this country.
Yeah.
Now, Helmut, a lot of what I just now described are vehicles and instruments that have a lot of conditions around them. You can only access it if you have this. You can only access it if you are part of this. You can only access it if you are at this level or stage or whatever ranking in the Namibian society.
Mm.
There was a lovely comment that David made. I hope David is not listening. So that he hears I'm not using his borrowing his words here in studio. Is that many countries are now trying to determine and to define specifically what has China gotten right, and what do we have to emulate from what they've gotten right by alleviating 700 million people out of poverty since the 1970s this way,
yeah.
When they went into the modernization trend from the 1970s in this direction. It's not rocket science.
No.
It's not rocket science. I spoke about it. I've interviewed people here. We've cited it. It's about purposeful investment strategies.
Intentional.
By the government, by the country in itself and in its people. And then we have got to work on mechanisms to alleviate the pressures that a governor like McNab cited yesterday.
Mm.
You know, that interconnectedness of the negative permeating social ills. Because I will ask you again, dear listeners, where in what world did you think that crime is not related to a social negative that's manifesting in a community?
Yeah. This is more often about desperation.
Yeah.
Drives a lot of people into drug abuse. Not all of them, because it's not the primary cause.
Yeah.
More like it's not the only cause. But it cannot be ruled out. I mean, it's basically a well-known fact that a lot of people find themselves using a lot of a lot of drugs because of desperation or economic issues that they're going through.
Yeah.
And those the addiction to those drugs drives them into committing crimes.
Yeah.
And commercial break.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue from here, and we have 28 minutes left to the hour of China Corner, or the hour of 6. So if you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run. That's with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Even though Dwight had to step out and put together all the necessary pieces. That's for the next show. Do the final cooking for the China Corner that's coming up in 28 minutes. So. Economic
inclusivity.
Having, I don't think we actually, no, I don't think this is a very simple reality. Did we really need the African Union and STC to show up and tell us that, you know what? Yes, a lot of African countries, except the countries that are, you know, not wars, especially countries that are not, you know, active war zones like your Sudan, and parts of Somalia, parts of Mozambique, and pretty much a large chunk of the Sahel region. A lot of countries like Namibia, to take Botswana, South Africa, is, you know, a large chunk of Southern African countries. We should be having a whole different discussion in relations to inclusivity and the. But when it comes to things like social safety nets, we, I believe, have to start addressing the elephant in the room. Yes, we don't have a lot of money to go around that is that we see in a lot of developed countries. But the little resources that we have, here's the irony though, because we are at the top of the list and have been for a while in economic inequality, and we are developed countries. That means we don't have enough resources to go around. But the little that we have, we are also not distributing properly. Now, the irony, like which I already pointed out, is we can't, in my opinion, talk about inclusive financing without addressing the economic inequality discussion. You can build as much technology as you want to move e-wallet, easy wallet, blue, all kinds of wallet from point A to point B as fast as you want, as fast as you can. And but the question will still remain, the resources and what it's reflecting in terms of unequal distribution, because that's where the economic inequality is emanating from. What do we have to do? What do we have to do about that? Because I feel like that's what we should have addressed first. And I will just rope in our excitement in relations to oil and gas for us to reach, you know, a production level. And then, you know, once we reach production by 2029, 2030, 2035. Now, what's interesting is someone will basically have to help me answer this question. If we are terrible at sharing the proceeds of all kinds of natural resources being extracted in this country, what makes us think that when we start commercializing oil, we will all of the sudden become sharing experts? You know, Jesus Christ with two fish and one loaf of bread, or is it the other way around? I have no idea. So if we are terrible at sharing gold, fish, and uranium, we would just equally be terrible at sharing oil. We're not going to drink it. The point is the revenue that I'm talking about here. Because, I'm just using the extractive industry, but as you can imagine, the economic inequality goes much deeper than just the extractive industry proceeds in Namibia. But before we continue some of the cascading social ills that emanates from desperation as a result of, call it poverty on the African continent, basically. And we'll go with the Institute of Security Studies in a few, but before that, let's take a live read. Vilvicha University 2027 applications now open. Faculty of Health Sciences program certificate for enrolled nurse, midwife / accoucheur level 6, certificate in pharmacy level 5, diploma in environmental health sciences level 6, bachelor of social work honors, bachelor of nursing and midwifery science honors, postgraduate diploma in community health nursing level 8, postgraduate diploma in occupational health and safety level 8, postgraduate diploma in mental health and nursing level 8, mental health nursing level 8, master of public health, Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406, Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So, quick break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete.
Welcome back. We have we have enough time. So, keeping the spotlight on Africa's child soldiers. Before I get to child soldiers, there are a lot of obvious need for social safety nets on the African continent, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. And this is just like basically every problem that you find in a lot of countries that impacts a large number of people, it can easily be blamed on governance, not an individual person or individual political party. It becomes a governance issue because last time I checked, parliaments, even if you look at countries that have, even if you have look at countries that have, I don't want to use the dictator as an example. So let's just pack the bus on that one. The executive branch or the executive branch may be headed by an individual from from a dominating party, but the parliament, aka your legislative branch, it's more often. Actually, you think, basically even the executive branch, you think your cabinet, they are made out of different political parties. Now, these different political parties is why I'm saying when we look at a governance issue, it's not a one political party thing or it's a one person thing. It becomes, it's a governance issue. For Africa, this becomes a very bleak discussion to have, because if you look at it from the perspective of just how desperate young people are to leave, the African continent in search, in search of opportunities, that draws a very, if it wasn't tragic, it would be funny because, we just witnessed a bunch of young people not having as much as a backpack on them.
It wasn't just young people. It was even older guys. But they were between teenagers and like in their 30s, some of these people. Because remember, some people could run across.
Yeah.
They could storm across. Others decided to swim around.
This is about 600 to 800 of them. How many?
80,000.
80,000.
Yes, sir.
Now,
within the first 3 days, it was 69,000 that had already crossed. And by the last day...
How many people are in commas?
490-something thousand, almost 500,000, give or take, according to NSA.
That's a large...
In between, babies were born in 2024... 2025, and the first
there been a few weekends, and Namibroar is motivated.
Yeah, so that number is exponentially expanded by now.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, if you look at and the whole is it a sweater thing, that just went mainstream. But that's just went mainstream because of the sheer number in a limited, you know, in such a short period of time. Because I've never seen something like that.
Yeah.
But if you look at how many young people are just risking their lives to swim, just how many people, young people, are risking their lives to swim across the Red Sea, and some of them are literally paying smugglers to smuggle them.
Yep.
That, for me, points to the desperation that social safety nets would cushion a lot of people from.
Yes. And the social safety nets are things that you install internally in your country.
Yeah.
You have them internally for your citizens. They are there to alleviate problems.
Yeah.
For example, with the dole that exists in the UK.
Yeah.
The US have a lovely, like, it's like a intermediate rental governmental program. You go find, it's known as SNAP. Is it SNAP? Or is it the other one? But you go find, if you're unemployed, Helmut, find an affordable piece of housing. You apply for an unemployment benefit, ne? And then the government subsidizes like 80 to 70% of your rent while you are trying to transition from being, you know, let's say you've just lost your job and you're now unemployed, and then you've got to find the next particular benefit. And they're going to help you on a short-term period in that regard. So as we look at this particular dimension, we have to ask the question of what from that SDC particular discussion, because I mean that day one they were happy about developments and discussions and many particular things that would emanate from this first speeches that were taking place.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, if you compare Namibia into the rest of Africa, not with South Africa, not with Zimbabwe, not with Zambia, not with Angola, not with Botswana, I'm talking about past these initial SADC countries, you really have to look for these particular social developments or for these social interventions from the governments of these other African countries. Because Namibia can look good. Namibia can look good. And we do look good on paper. I still remember the one UN guy in 2024 when Hopalang Pororo from the UN resident here in Windhoek to Namibia, when she met us, the media, there was a UN representative, one of her colleagues, I forgot the guy, he's still there, but he's a Spanish, and he explained, because I asked a question about social safety nets, and he said, Namibia is one of the few African countries that have a pension, a general pension for its elderly population. So we have milestones that are that are like flagship programs of what you can get right with a few financial resources, not a resource in the ground. Financial resources that the government has access to that you can get right.
Yeah.
Now, our next question, obviously, as Namibians, is what we've been talking about for the past, 4 years. How can we get to the next level so that everyone draws a benefit? From there.
Yeah. So because right now we have a lot of conditional taking place, but the goal we are headed towards is to have one for everyone else.
It is the question everyone is asking, Helmut.
Yeah.
From the high school kid to the formerly now currently retired Namibians to Namibians working in between.
Yeah.
Everyone is asking the question, how do we derive that benefit?
That's an interesting perspective, but let me take you back to the beginning of the point that you just made. And that is, we have a lot of, conditional though they may be, we have a lot of safety nets that is not available in some African countries.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things, that's something basically to tap ourselves on the shoulder for.
Yeah.
Because we have, sluggish though it may be, we are making a few strides in comparison to a lot of countries.
Yeah.
And this is primarily important for me to point out, because you know, one advantage of that we have also, especially a lot of countries, you know, the majority of the countries in SADC, is that we are, you know, we can sit in one place and have these discussions because we are not dealing with a lot of political, you know, instability or just a bunch of, you know, trigger-happy armed guys running around.
Yeah.
We have, first of all, we have the political atmosphere that enables the discourse for us to ask questions like, okay, yes, we have, you know, but now on top of the political, the political stability, which is a wonderful thing, which basically lays the foundation for any other discourse to be held in certain kinds of ways. You know, not at gunpoint. You are following, you know, all your all protocol observed type of discussion, your consultations, to make sure that everyone is on the same page with regards to what's being implemented or what's being decommissioned. Except everything is being done in English. We have to work on that one.
Getting back to our conversation of yesterday.
Yeah, because you can't just go to the village and go rah 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 and then compile a report and tell the president or the minister, whoever you're reporting to, that, you know what, we did our job.
No, we did
our job. No, you didn't. No one had you.
Did you even ask? Did you even ask? Did you guys understand what I just shared now?
Yeah.
Askies, asamblief, ons verstaan nie so mooi nie. Ons vang nie die Engels nie. I'm not making jokes, guys. I'm being serious here because... Yeah. That is how a lot of Namibians would basically say, you know, tell people, please, we don't understand English.
So we have got to stop doing things so that we can just compile a report.
Yeah.
Yeah. China Corner preparations is taking up. So it's for the next 12 minutes, it's just you and I. So... the consultations, brilliant idea. The conditional safety nets, brilliant idea. The English, on the other hand, is still just, especially when it comes to consultation events. Ah, guys, come on. You are in the village. You arrived there in a four-wheel drive capable vehicle. And you know very well, you are not in England. And you just rah-rah-rah throughout the day and assume that, you know what? If you are reporting to the president, for example, you just come back to the president and go like, yes, we visited this and this and this and this village. And I like how you like to take pictures with the residents and a few videos. You just find the young ones that are coming from school, which is a brilliant idea. And, you know, give them a handshake. Plus, a homeboy is super excited to meet, a member of parliament. And you just give them a handshake and start asking them, so how was school? Everything is fine. Yeah, bro just got home from school. You're going to have to talk to the grandma. Now, to pull that off, you'll have to get a translate. Just break it down, the consultations. And I believe when it comes to this whole consultations discussions, we are running away from one thing here. We know... 90% of the consultation discussions that we're holding, or these public engagements, the discussions, we can't have these discussions in our own native language. That's my personal conclusion. I've concluded. I feel like we are scared to death to hold these discussions in our native languages because deep down we know we only know like a bunch of these words a bunch of these things in English, but to translate them to our own native language, that's a type of initiative we still have to invest in. This is why I kept referencing why religion has such a stronghold in a lot of African countries, because both the Bible and the hymnals, these are basically your songbooks, have been translated in more languages than developmental initiatives. And you wonder why people believe in miracle more than the president. Because what they're being taught, or what we are being taught at church, is being broken down in the basic language that we speak at home. And that's religion now. And now the consultation, on the other hand, the developmental initiatives, things, you know, economic and political, you know, or legal changes that are taking place in the country, the ones that are very important for us to keep up with in terms of where our country, the direction our country is headed, or the direction the continent is headed. Everything is being held in one language, and we are just crossing our fingers and hoping my grandma, who never set foot in class, is going to understand your verbosity. Oh, come on. Seriously? So, all I'm saying is, consultation-wise, let's just copy from religion on this one. I'm not saying let's copy miracles and, miracle type of oil. No, I'm just talking about the breakdown of information. And we already have the enthusiasm. I know that, you know, some preachers, you know, they preach the word with a lot of, you know, very enthusiastically. And now, public representatives, especially when we're holding these public consultations, there's a lot of enthusiasm in the way that we are using very Oxford-level English to try to break down this information. Actually, we are doing the complete opposite. Now, the thing about world religion is they make it easy, they break it down. And we just cross our fingers and hope that a radio presenter at Wato or Mwanyi or Shipi FM or is going to pick it up and then translate it in. Now, if you know any Kavango, ask them about one gentleman who I'm not sure if that was a fictional character or a person that really existed. The gentleman's name was Makaranga. Now, if you if you're Kavango, you're already rolling on the floor by now, because you know where this point is headed to. Now, Makaranga is an individual, is a very interesting figure in Kavango, of an individual, and a man more often pictured, who did a lot of translation work or interpretation work during colonial times. And he got a lot of people beaten up because he was, bro didn't understand Afrikaans. I'm assuming not a single word that he spoke in Afrikaans, but he decided, you know, because of his confidence, I assume, people thought he knew how to speak Afrikaans. And a lot of them ended up getting beaten up over something they didn't say. Because when the, you know, when the Buddha said Vatsukje, his interpretation was Nambesuka Kuriarika, which he, it's a, my Nyemba friends are already laughing. I know that part. But the thing is, Vatsukje is basically, what do you want? But Nambesuka Kuriarika means, even sugar I eat. The loosely translated into that. So we know that Vatsukje and even sugar I can eat are two different things. And while clearly in the in a lot of this Makaranga interpretation, a lot of people got beaten up. The white guy was doing the beating was as innocent as the guy that was being beaten up. The only terrible character in this case was this Makaranga guy. Now, why am I bringing up that story? It's because it's funny as hell. And it's also because it's from my region. So I didn't want to make fun of other people's regions because I don't have bodyguards. Now, but the point is, when we are just running around with these public consultations, holding all these kind of engagements in our private school English, and we are assuming that someone will do the interpretation or translation, whatever it is you want to call it, are you sure there is just not you are not leaving a lot of a game of telephone taking place here? There's a lot of Makaranga-ish type of translation taking place here. I'm just going to go ahead and assume, until I'm proven otherwise, I'm just going to go ahead and assume there is a lot of Makaranga translation, Makaranga type of translation going on here. So, child soldiers, Governor McNabb's, more like layout of how a lot of social ills that we see in Namibia, at least, he was looking at that from, he was looking at that from a hard-up region, his regional point of view. But it's something that it's very observable, not just in Namibia, but not just the whole Namibia, but and not just the whole Namibia and the whole Africa, but the whole world. These social ills are interconnected. Economic desperation forces people to swim across the Red Sea to go and look for opportunities. Now, for Namibia, it's very easy to think that we have it really hard. I'm not saying we cannot do better. I'm just saying we can do way better if we just iron out the economic inequality. Now, imagine we're already doing way better than a lot of African countries with the giant elephant in the room, which is economic inequality. Now, imagine how well we would be doing if we did not have this elephant in the room. I would argue we'd be doing way better. Except we'll just beat around the bush. You know, what we need is more investors. Okay, what we need is to expedite the oil exploration or whatever exploration, uranium exploration in the Mahiki region, for us to have as much natural resources as possible being shipped to the port and not processed at home to make a lot of money to solve all our social issues. No, it won't. Again, in the next basically 1 minute that I have to wrap it up and make room for China Corner, is if we can't share, look, if we don't know how to share the proceeds from the natural resources that we have been extracting for decades, we are not. There is not a miracle that's going to happen that will make us all of a sudden learn to share the natural the proceeds that will come from the oil industry once it starts flowing. We'll just rob that natural resources in the very same category that a lot of natural resources in this country already are, which is all roads lead to economic inequality. Now, the positive side. If we have the natural resources, if we have all kinds of conditional, although they may be safety nets right now, and they're doing, and which it's enabling us to do fairly well compared to a lot of countries, what makes you think? Can you imagine how awesome we will be doing if we just lend to share? Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You all have a good one. And please do stay tuned for China Corner.